RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome, welcome, welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day Medicine Ball Val and
Beans. Are you sitting on a medicine ball?
No, but I'm down in the basement, so all my fitness equipment's here. So I'm just sitting in my seat and just doing some medicine ball twists.
Hmm. Very good.
Got to tone up my midsection here.
I don't know, Frank. From what I've seen, you're in pretty good shape. I don't know how much toning is necessary.
Well, who knows? The quite frankly swimsuit edition is coming out soon.
Yes, a calendar. You know how many women would go nuts for a quite frankly calendar?
Lauren. Oh, Lauren would go nuts. There would be a calendar in every room.
She doesn't need a calendar. She has you.
I know. And especially in the summertime.
Why do you walk around?
Well, I mean,
pants off all the time.
Yeah, well, you have to. It's summertime. It's just multiple. You do a full shower multiple times a day, but you do rinse offs. So, because you just sweat so much.
I don't know. I don't. Okay.
You don't?
No.
It's just one a day?
I mean, I have central air, so. I'm in South Carolina. You can't function without central air down here.
Yeah. We have one small air conditioner over here, and that's just to make the nights a little bit more bearable. So.
When I lived in New York, I will tell you, I did not have central air. I had one air conditioner. It was in my dining room, and we couldn't put an AC in my bedroom because the windows were bay windows in the front, and that was the only place.
Oh.
So I had to leave my door open and pray that the AC pushed through. It was horrible.
Yeah, you learn a lot about vacuums and cross ventilation. You learn a lot about that over the years. So you get you can't have another window open or else there's going to be no flow.
It's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Aerodynamics. So listen, we have a lot to talk about today.
Let's do it.
And we had a crazy night last night, a crazy end of the day. It's been insanity in the General Flynn case. I don't even know what to say. I've read everybody's opinion on this. I've read the legal scholars. I've read the lawyers. I've read everybody, and I don't think anybody has a positive. There's one person on Twitter that had a positive outlook of this. So let's break down what happened yesterday in the case of General Flynn. The judge in the case put in a minute order that allowed for amicus curiae briefs to be filed, friend of the court briefs to be filed. He said, basically, in light of the interest this case has brought nationwide, it will be, something that we do here in this court to accept the opinions of people who are not related to the case. They're friends of the court. In other words, trying to assist the court in making a decision on what the court should do with the motions in front of them. And I'm going to pull up the case right now because they've just been two new filings. So basically what happened is this. Apparently there was a filing by a outside group called the Watergate Reporters or something. The Watergate Reporters or something. They're doing a book and they filed this amicus curiae brief. And I'm not exactly sure because the stuff's not really on the docket in the right way, how the order of this came in. What I think happened is these people filed to put this brief on the docket. The judge in the case has denied 23 other requests for the same thing before. So anybody that tried to file an addendum, if you guys follow Pacer at all, and I know that you don't necessarily, Frank, but there's a guy that always tries to file these sorts of things. Named David Allen Christensen or something to that effect, or David Christensen. And they don't make any sense. They're never in relation to the case. They're always like, oh, Barack Obama is a deep state traitor. And you know what I mean? They're always weird conspiratorial things. And occasionally the court will let one in, but most of the time the courts deny these because they're not, they're being filed in criminal cases and this has never happens in a criminal case. You don't allow this in a criminal case, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that these people tried to file. Sidney Powell saw it, filed a motion against it, saying there's no reason why this should be allowed. You've denied it 23 other times. Not only that, the Justice Department doesn't even want to continue with this case at all. There should be no reason for this. It's already delaying justice for the defendant, right? The judge came back. It appears this is the timeline. I could be wrong, but the judge came back with a minute order. Given the current posture of this case, the court anticipates that individuals and organizations will seek leave of the court to file. I'm not sure if it's amicus or amicus curiae briefs pursuant to local civil rule 7. There is no analogous rule in the local criminal rules, but the local civil rules govern all proceedings in the United States District Court for the District of Columbia. In other words, there's nothing on the books that says this should be allowed in a criminal case. But because the civil rules govern the court, we're going to allow it. Then he says, he quotes a case, and he says, an amicus curiae defined as friend of the court does not represent the parties, but participates only for the benefit of the court. Okay. Thus, it is solely within the court's discretion to determine the fact, extent, and manner of the participation. An amicus brief should normally be allowed when a party is not represented competently or is not represented at all, when the amicus has an interest in some other case that may be affected by the decision in the present case, or when the amicus has unique information or perspective that can help the court beyond the help that the lawyers for the parties are able to provide. Otherwise, leave to file the brief should be denied. And then he says, although there was no corollary in the local criminal rules to local civil rule 7, the rule that we're talking about, a person or entity may seek leave of the court to file a brief in a criminal case, see minute order, as Judge Amy Berman Jackson has observed, while there may be individuals with an interest in this matter, criminal proceeding is not a free-for-all. Accordingly, at the appropriate time, the court will enter a scheduling order governing the submission of any briefs. So the court is basically saying, we'll take some of them. It's not going to turn into a circus, but this doesn't make any sense, Frank.
I'm trying to make sense of all of this. So, I mean, okay. How about this? Put it in a nutshell for me. Last week, of course, was the big reveal that the DOJ was going to drop charges against Flynn. We were doing all the breakdowns, the reviews again. We knew that it wasn't the end of the road because we still needed to have the case officially dismissed, which what I gathered was, just a little bit more than a formality because, yeah, of course, the judge can be a stick in the mud. But what are you going forward with if the DOJ is not going to pursue anything? You know, what's left to do here? So with that being said, where is that whole situation now?
Well, a couple different things. Either, and this is just, I can't even believe we're having this conversation right now. Okay,
whatever the conversation is, I believe it.
I can't believe we're in the United States of America. The judge could, I guess, technically rule against all of the motions in front of him and sentence General Flynn to prison.
Wow.
Or,
you know, I had that in the back of my head. I said, if it's actually possible, if it really is in the judge's hands, I wouldn't be surprised. I also wouldn't be surprised if this happens. Let's see.
If that happens, this case will go to the Supreme Court in less than 5 seconds. And the ability for a judge to ever do that again will be swiftly removed. Swiftly. He may even be removed from the bench, to be fair. Honestly.
This Sullivan guy?
Yeah. It is so outside of the realms of justice if the judge were to do something like that. It is so, there's like literally a 0.00001% chance that even happens. Because, you know, for right now, as it stands in this case, the government, DOJ, and Jensen, the special, you know, the U.S. attorney out of Missouri who's doing this, can continue to submit exculpatory evidence to Sidney Powell, which then she can file. Because the case is still open. So anything that starts dripping in now anything he uncovers, anything he finds, if they wanted to use this as a vehicle to get that stuff out, they could.
Hmm.
So literally discovery could continue as this all winds down. Now, that brief that was submitted to the docket that Sidney Powell responded to, the judge literally just ruled on. He said, Chambers received proposed notice of intent to file motion for leave to file brief as amicus curiae or application under local rule 57.6 and statement of interest. In light of the court's forthcoming schedule order governing the submission of any briefs, leave to file is denied. The clerk of the court is directed not to docket the filing, signed Judge Emmett Sullivan. And then he ruled on Sidney Powell's motion to stop it and said, I'm ruling denied as moot because I'm not allowing it on. The problem is he's not allowing it on because it's not something he will allow on. He's not allowing it on because he hasn't provided the schedule for people to submit yet. What this is doing is basically turning this into a kangaroo nonsense political engine for the 2000 U.S. attorneys with that group that filed that step down bar because this is such a travesty of justice letter to file an amicus brief, or Lawfare to file an amicus brief, or similarly, Ron Coleman and Robert Barnes to file an amicus brief. The problem is that the judge is going to pick which ones go.
Hmm.
So, like, those guys could file some real strong stuff. Jonathan Turley could file one, for goodness sakes. I could write a letter filing one. Anybody can do it. That's the problem. They're going to get flooded with millions of these shits. Excuse my French. Anyway, and this is going to turn this case into a circus.
It's already a circus.
I mean, it's ridiculous. The guy could just rule on this shit. It's easy. The DOJ does not believe they have a case. They don't want to charge him anymore. Time went on. They found new stuff. Not only that. Hold on one second.
Hello?
I just had a cough.
Hello.
It's just me? Just me now?
Not only that, but look, I'm having an orange. There is a piece that came out by this guy I just discovered. The one I read the other day, and that last paragraph was like so funny, where he said, I'm happy to point out another place where you're wrong. Uh-huh. Remember?
I don't know.
Oh, Frankie.
Was it on Monday?
It was Monday. I read this piece from Red State about the Flynn case that they were attacking Lawfare blog. And at the bottom, he said, I used to write for this outlet.
Oh, yes.
You chuckled, unless you just weren't listening to me.
I was listening to you.
Maybe I should test you on what.
Oh, you want me to quiz on all the stuff that we cover? Oh, my God. I'm lucky I've survived this long, the last 2 years.
You've been great. Do you ever learn anything, or am I,
No, of course. That's why a lot of times I opt to just sit back and listen. I still struggle like with things like the Farah stuff. Mm. I've been suggesting people go and listen to your breakdowns over and over again above listening to me try to piece that one together. But as far as this circus mentality or the approach to this Flynn stuff goes, I mean, it's just I don't really ever expect anything to be the be all end all these days. I would like for the tides to turn, and I'd like to see something really change up, and in the moment when it looks like we have a really great positive development in hand, I like celebrating like everybody else. But when this pops up and there's a possibility that the fight isn't over because somebody out there is going to try to inject themselves forcefully into the history books, whether it be a judge or whatever, everybody's just trying to force themselves into the history books. And it's all in a very inverted reality kind of way.
History is written by the winners, Frank.
I know. And just end, period, end. But, I don't know. It's all inverted right now. Like, what can anybody ever really get from pushing this forward except for to think that what has been done, what has been unearthed and how General Flynn, in many cases, many ways, in every way, has been vindicated. They're trying to see there are people out there that are trying to paint and manipulate that vindication as corruption instead of the other way around.
This we are literally at war in this country. There is war going on right now, people. A war, and it is brutal. And for 1 minute, don't think that this is going to be smooth sailing. It is not going to be smooth sailing. This is going to be a rough patch. There are going to be ups and there are going to be some downs. And everybody needs to just hang in there. And this is one of those bumps in the road we're going to get through. But this is crazy.
I think there's going to be a lot of downs the next 4 months.
And there's going to be a lot of highs the next 4 months, too. I mean, this is something else we're living through right now. So back to Red State. So this guy, who I don't know, but is a former U.S. attorney of 20 years, is Shipwrecked Crew. He's been making the rounds lately. I found him on Twitter. I've been following him. He's great. Puts this column before all this comes out yesterday in Red State. Judge Emmett Sullivan likely committed reversible error in taking the guilty plea of General Michael Flynn. And he goes through what happened in that December 18th hearing where Judge Sullivan made the infamous suggestion that maybe General Flynn could have committed treason, that he backtracked and offered a non-apology apology and attempted to defend his motives for asking the question. So he basically, what they're saying is he violated a rule of the court when he did that and then accepted his guilty plea anyway when he reaffirmed it, knowing that he violated a rule that nullifies it, basically, technically. So there's a technicality here that the DOJ is likely aware of but has not done anything about yet, probably because they're trying to hope that this freaking judge does the right thing. This is crazy. I mean, there's no other words for what are happening right now. And I read again one thing that this is some like insider plan to get to. It's not. This is not that. This is not some 5D chess plan. No, trust me. It's not.
This is just how bad the judiciary is.
Yes.
Still is. With all the flushing out that has gone on the last 3 years, this is just what's there. And it keeps going back to the same thing. Imagine all the people will never learn their names who have been screwed by judges like this, by prosecutors like these. Just imagine.
So, Frank, all of those people sitting in prison right now, for crimes they didn't commit, to your point, have judges like this to look to help them with, quote, justice. I have nothing good to say about this man right now. Nothing. And there's hope porn, as they call it on Twitter, and there's fear porn, right? There are people on one side who are like, everybody, this is a 5D chess plan to get all the information out in the court docket. And then there's the people saying he's doomed. He's going to jail. Nothing's ever going to change. No one's ever going to go to, you know what I mean? No one's ever going to be held accountable. And then there's the middle, which is just the facts, ma'am, right? And just the facts, ma'am, indicate that neither of those things are true and that we are just in unprecedented insanity right now in this country.
Yeah.
Which is why those judge appointments are so important.
So I keep saying,
I know
it is the only reason for voting for president these days, to be honest, for me, at least. Now, who's going to enrich the judiciary? Because that gives people time. It gives people time. And that's really what we need. It's just people acting, sitting around and wondering when our representatives are going to do anything is ridiculous at times.
Speaking of which, I wasn't going to do this yet. Actually, I'm not going to do it yet. Hold on 1 second. I got a text about this case. Just sending a photo. I get texts about this case from certain people all day long. So speaking of that, so now, you know, we're getting, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on, right, Frank? So there's, We're going to talk about the spending bill. This next bill that came through the House.
Oh, which, God.
Yeah. But I can't start on that right now because I'll get distracted and the rest of this will go by the wayside. This bill. Oh, Lord. Okay. So we have all of this stuff coming out now, right? Grinnell has delivered these names of who unmasked, who did the unmasking request for General Flynn, apparently, to the DOJ. The DOJ said, we're not releasing them, but then said, it's up to you, Grinnell. If you want to release them, you've got the power, basically throwing the ball back in his court, whether or not he wants to release them. I have argued that if they release certain things, it's not necessarily what we want to see. I'd rather them hold on to those things because they're using them in ongoing investigations than release them to the public. Transparency is a great thing, but if it's at the expense of a criminal prosecution, I'd much rather wait a little longer. That's just my opinion. But we've got the transcripts. I did a huge 75 tweet thread yesterday that I really would like to go over with you because you're going to be involved in this one. Soup to nuts. You know this story. It's about WikiLeaks.
Okay.
And then we have Brian Stelter, of all people, your friend and mine.
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine.
saying things like this. Hold on.
So disappointing to look at what we're seeing from right-wing media these days, where there's such an obsession with the deep state and these revelations about the Russia probe. Latest on the Robert Mueller Russia investigation. Mueller investigation, the Russia investigation, Trump's Russia ties, and Robert Mueller. The real Russia story, Russia probe, the ongoing Russia probe, Russia probe, Russia investigation. But Mueller and the Russia probe, Russia synergies, they wonder if Russia has compromising information on the president. What is the source for the president's claim that they have found no collusion with Russia? He misspelled collusion. Every day we're trying to keep track of the drip, drip, drip of the Russia investigation. Drip, 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 Trump and Russia. To see whether Trump was secretly working for Russia. To bring it back to Russia and Russia and Russia. 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 Russia's in Russia. 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 Robert Mueller. Robert Mueller. Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Robert Mueller. Robert Mueller.
Yes, that's perfect.
We're obsessed with it. We're obsessed with it, Frank. We are now. We're obsessed with it.
But don't you get... But that's just... It's in the past. Don't you understand? When it's not useful to them and they have to throw their toy away, then don't talk about that anymore. That's behind us. We are able to go and do whatever we want and create and lead the narrative and stoke the fires of dissent in this country and to just destroy the American psyche. And when it's no longer useful to us or when it starts boomeranging on us, we need to go on to other things, which is yet another narrative we control completely. And I heard the rest of that. I actually listened to the rest of that clip last night on the show. I went off on him a little bit.
Frank, you know, it's not nice to make fun of Disney characters, Frank.
I know. I feel bad for Mickey Mouse these days. And you think about this. He's talking about he made Katrina references. He said that every day is Hurricane Katrina, pretty much, because of the deaths that are coming in from COVID-19.
Somebody has to look at Brian Stelter every day when he comes home crying in his bed.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, a little aside, because
I'd love to watch him eat a pudding cup.
Ugh, I wouldn't want to watch him eat anything.
No, I think it would be really funny to me if I can just watch him eat a pudding cup. I think it would be funny and pathetic. And I that sometimes makes me very happy. I was just sitting there on a couch alone.
Like George Costanza.
Yeah. Alone in a room eating a pudding cup or a fruit cup.
Oh, like, with the juice and the syrup like dripping out of it. Ugh.
It's like a second snack at the end. You drink the juice.
I love you. Okay, so let's just keep the laughter going for another second because otherwise we'll probably hang ourselves. Here we go. This coronavirus nonsense is getting out of control and people are really, really just pissed off about it now. So our friend, and I can literally say friend because he was for a very long time a good friend, Vic DiPetetto did something very funny, which I want to share with everybody.
Vic.
Vicky. Ready?
Yep.
I hope it works with just listening.
I had to get out of there. I felt the coronavirus was all around me. Who wasn't wearing a mask? Who aren't wearing gloves? Brady was standing 5.5 feet away from me. I don't know what to do anymore. Who do I listen to? Do I listen to the experts on TV or the experts on Facebook? What happened to Dr. Fauci? How come he's not in the news conference anymore? What did they do to Dr. Fauci? Oh, my God. Did a spaceship land in a rose garden and take him away to a different planet? Oh, my God. I gotta calm down. I gotta calm down. Oh, my God. What if the virus is out here? What do I do with the gloves and the mask? What if the virus is here? Are these? How do I get rid of them? I don't want to put them on the street. That's not nice. I'll get rid of it later. Oh, my God. I touched the steering wheel. What if the virus is on the steering wheel now? I just spit on the dashboard. What if the virus is on the dashboard on the steering wheel? Oh, my God. I gotta calm down. I gotta calm down. I'll listen to some music. Oh, my God. I just touched the knob. What if the virus is on the knob? Oh, my God. Calm down, Vic. Calm down. Calm down. Easy. We'll get through this. Yeah.
So he has the gloves on from that he was wearing outside. He takes them off in the car and the gloves touch his hands. And then he's like, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And he's just so excited. You know, this is that's it. That's the best kind of comedy out there. Observational. That's how nuts we are. That's how nuts we are.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So Vic DiPietro is hysterical. There's a part two to that as well, but we don't need to play it. So there's that.
You cheers wanted, to you, Vic.
I mean, cheers to Vic DiPietro. He came out with something like a week and a half ago about how he was pissed off that the federal government was saying they didn't want to give New York aid. And it was really like just uninformed. And so I didn't like it very much. It was just uninformed. Like if he knew what was actually going on, he wouldn't have done it. But he doesn't know because a lot of people are just brainwashed. A lot of people are brainwashed, Frank.
Oh, I know. You have a state closes itself down, shoots itself in the throat, and then it feels natural at this point to say, what do you mean the federal government's not going to give us billions and billions of dollars? I mean, that should just, why not? They have an endless supply of money. Why won't they give us money? That sounds inhumane to me.
I mean, it's an endless supply of money that we have to get around to this again.
It's an endless supply of cotton. That's all it is. It's just paper. And I don't know. And this is ultimately why it's almost impossible. And I whenever in real life, I tend to just shut my mouth and let people live inside of their fantasies because you know that there's no getting through to them. So, A, where do you even start? How far back in American history do you have to go to explain where we are right now?
Oh, yeah.
And B, you're working against a scared animal. And we're all animals. You're working against a scared animal. Try reasoning with a scared cat.
Try reasoning with a scared child. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, seriously. So it comes a time where you just gotta hang your head and exhale and try to find something else to lift your spirits back up because there's no saving that person, especially when it comes to this thing. You'll never get through to them, ever.
So.
Yeah.
How many more? Let's do this thread real quick and then we'll get back to coronavirus and the spending bill or whatever the hell this monstrosity of crap that the Democrats have put on the table is.
Speaking of useless, worthless money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ridiculous. Okay. I did a thread yesterday, Frank, because what has happened now that Sean Henry is on the record, Sean Henry, the president of CrowdStrike, former FBI guy under the Mueller administration, under the Mueller FBI. He was under oath in testimony in front of the HPSI saying that they have literally no evidence that the Russians exfiltrated the data from the servers. No evidence at all.
Mm-hmm.
So this has gone like mainstream now, where everybody thinks that they're the first to talk about the fact that the DNC was not hacked by the Russians. And I'm sitting here looking around like there are millions of us who have been saying this from legitimately before the election. Like, this is something that we have followed with, I mean, I can't even explain to you how many hours invested in this story with Guccifer 2 and WikiLeaks and all of the back stuff and Seth Rich and everything, right? All the stuff that went along with it. So I decided that I was going to do a thread yesterday that took all of the hard evidence that we have, all of the factual information, and explained sort of where we're at in that way. Because there's the conspiracy theory aspect of this, and then there's the legitimacy, you know, aspect of it. And they're melding together at this point. So I said, for years, we've been told that to even question whether or not the Russians hacked the DNC, the DCC, and Podesta was a massive conspiracy theory. How dare you? You remember the crap people have taken along the way for that?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, maybe somebody could explain this one to me. But we already know that the first talking point of 17 intelligence agencies agree, that wasn't even true. But to those who did concur with each other about the Russians hacking the DNC, where did they get their evidence? If the FBI couldn't touch the server, they got all of their talking points from CrowdStrike. And now CrowdStrike says that they don't have any evidence that happened, but they have suspicions pretty much once again. It's like every last one of the impeachment witnesses. Well, we don't have any direct evidence, but you know, a bad gut feeling tells me that Trump was up to no good. So then, what is anybody talking about? And of course, yeah, like you said, this is stuff that we've been asking and pressing for 3.5 years now to the response of "Go away, conspiracy theorist." And now, of course, the people who have put their toys down, have to move on to the next thing, and either don't want you to pay attention to it or they're going to give you a new way to look at it.
So we've said the entire time, this is the linchpin of the entire thing. And Svetlana on the show even said they were worried about General Flynn because of the emails. They had no idea at the time whether or not Hillary Clinton's emails that she had deleted were included in this stuff. They didn't know what people had, right? And then, of course, you bring in Michael Caputo being approached by members of the intelligence community saying that they had information for him that he didn't take. And then him reporting later that he saw it come out in the WikiLeaks emails. You remember all that?
Yep.
So we've been covering this forever. So even people that were more mainstream, whatever that means, were saying, you know, you really shouldn't talk about this. It's really just so conspiratorial. We should stay away from this. It discredits us. And I said, forget that nonsense. Forget that nonsense. That's how we ended up in this damn position in the first place. What are we trying to do here? Keep things the way they are or change them?
Right.
So I then go through how VIPs came out with their three memos with the technical details of why it is impossible that some of that material was hacked from the DNC servers and the DCC. Then I go through and I show the website called G2 Space, which was Adam Carter. He's with Integrity on Twitter, that I covered, and he emailed me because I was the only one who covered this years ago, and I've kept in touch with him sporadically now, but for a while. It's an amazing website that is dedicated to debunking Guccifer 2 as a Russian hacker. It is absolutely mandatory that anybody who's interested in this story read this website. He is a data guy. He uses forensics to do this stuff. This is not some, you know, nobody doing nonsense here. This is stuff that could hold up in court, Frank.
Well, we need that.
Anyway, so I go through that. And then what I do is I take John Solomon's article where he talks about how James Comey single-handedly shut down Julian Assange's Queen for a Day immunity deals to stop Vault 7. He was going to come in and he was going to be able to redact information in Vault 7 that would be harmful to the CIA, but still release it. He wasn't going to not release it. He was just going to work with them to, first of all, show them where their flaws were before the information was released so they could fix them, and B, redact information as determined by the two parties, and C, the FBI was going to work with him to try and figure out why, how people were getting to WikiLeaks employees and threatening them and stuff. And Julian Assange said, I also must give you evidence that proves that the information that came to me was not from the Russians. And Comey shut it down. Why wouldn't Comey, this is a rhetorical question, want to know who was that gave all this stuff to WikiLeaks?
It's, are we talking about Waldman again?
Yes. So what I did was I took that article and I took the text messages that we got from Signal, and I did a timeline and I melded the two together because the John Solomon article and those text messages mesh together. Who's involved in this story? Adam Waldman, who is a private citizen. He's an attorney and a lobbyist who represented during this time period Oleg Deripaska, Julian Assange, and Christopher Steele. One guy representing those three crucial Spygate figures. It's just,
yeah, one hell. He had one hell of a client list,
right? So I talk about that, but before I got to that, I just have to say I found the testimony of Andrew Brown, who was the guy in charge of all of the DNC infrastructure stuff, the guy in charge of their network. What their decision was, Frank, listen. Their decision. I didn't need a sip of water. Their decision to get rid of the quote hackers in this situation, in his own words, was literally to burn down the old infrastructure.
Burn down the old infrastructure.
So what they did, they said, oh, you guys have a you know, this nasty malware on your system. We better replace everything and start over.
Ah. Yes. That's very common, too.
I know. Very common. Having been in IT for over a decade, people do that all the time. They just burn their entire network down and start over from scratch.
Exactly. You go on a celebrity news website and you get infected with some spyware. The first thing that somebody will do is completely destroy your computer and rebuild it from scratch. let's just wipe the entire thing clean. Goodbye.
No, they didn't only wipe it, Frank. They replaced everything.
Oh, hardware. We're talking hardware replacement. Oh, it was that bad of a virus, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's COVID.
Mm-hmm.
It was COVID level infection.
I can't. So they burn it all down. Anyway, back to the story.
Yes.
So we have Adam Waldman, who is friends with Christopher Steele, Julian Assange, and Oleg Deripaska representing them all at the same time, who just so happens to be talking to, oh gosh, Bruce Ohr, Adam Loftman at the FBI, who's in charge of all these investigations we're going to talk to in a second, and Mark Warner, vice chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, the same Senate Intelligence Committee that just released that report the other day or last week or whatever, that basically said the Russians are coming. So they knew all the stuff that we're going to talk about. They knew it all from the horse's mouth. And it didn't matter not one bit, because as we're going to learn, Mark Warner didn't want a paper trail.
No. And of course, like you said before, this ultimately concludes with Jim Comey putting the kibosh on the entire thing, not wanting Julian Assange to come anywhere near American shores, because there was nothing going on. At this point, they had already soundly concluded that the Russia investigation, that they knew there's nothing there.
Yep.
But the whole point was, how does this last? We have to at least get it to the midterm election. And if we can push past that, which they did, they pushed it to March of 2019 until that's when the report came out. Then, of course, we had an entire summer worth of hearings and deliberation and reinterpretation of all of the nonsense, vague crap.
And then impeachment.
And then impeachment started about a month later. It was like I think that the last Jerry Nadler led Mueller hearing was in August, and by September we're talking about Ukraine, and here we are, and now it's virus time.
And then it was virus time. Yes.
It's unbelievable.
And then there'll be impeachment because of the virus.
Yep.
And then if he wins.
Because of the virus.
God knows. See.
Yeah. If they win.
No,
if we win. If we win, God knows what's happened to Apple. Absolutely. I had a friend of mine send me an email from this Next Generation America, you know, nextgenamerica.org?
Yeah.
Well, Next Gen is sending out, they're sending out scripts to large YouTube influencers. And the rate I saw that them putting on out there is $8,000, and it's for one shout out. And I saw the script that Next Gen is sending out to large influencers on YouTube and social media, and how they are going so hard in the paint on this coronavirus thing, even giving people, and you know, these average YouTube influencer types, you're not going there for any kind of new. You're going there for makeup tutorials. You're going there for unboxings. You're going there for just pop culture trash. And you should see what they're giving him. Here's a little, you want to hear a little bit of the transcript?
Yeah.
This is from paid for by Next Gen Climate Action Committee. Hey, this is name. They put it in brackets. I know things are crazy right now, but I want to stop and take a second to talk about some facts. No matter how you feel about Donald Trump or about politics, there's some stuff going on right now that we all need to know about. In January, Trump was warned about coronavirus. While Next Gen and all of their ilk were concentrating on impeachment.
This is sick.
Let's see. Oh, wait, no. Because remember, this is meant to trickle down to 15, 16, 17 year old, 18 year old first time voters. Okay. Instead of taking action that could have saved lives, he lied on national TV for 6 full weeks about the virus.
Oh.
People listened to him and thought it was okay and went out and got sick.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. This is, and all I think about is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez saying, go order some Asian food. Don't be racist. I think about Nancy Pelosi walking around San Francisco telling people, go out, go to some Asian restaurants.
The health commissioner in New York City telling people to go to the Chinese New Year parade.
Exactly. Exactly. Everybody out there in Italy is hugging Chinese people. Not a bad thing on any normal circumstance. But when you're telling people just to go out and do that because everybody's afraid of a virus that may have came in from China, which would be mainly carried by people that are probably coming from China who are Chinese. You think about all the things that were being done, this virtue signaling nonsense that was being done on behalf of saying there's nothing to worry about here.
Well, people sell out for $8,000. Amazing.
Oh, wait, no, it goes on. It goes on. People listened to him and thought that it was okay and then went out and got sick because they thought they could believe the president. And it turns out he was lying about the virus so that he could protect the stock market.
Are you kidding? Oh, my God.
I'm not kidding. While he and Republicans keep trying to protect the rich above everyone else, black and brown people and young people are losing our lives and jobs more than anyone else. None of us can afford another 4 years of this.
Oh,
so. Yeah, so I need
this
you to go to.
This should be illegal.
Yeah, they're paying idiots on YouTube. And now the person who sent this to me told me straight out that they sent back a you can tell them to go f- yourself. Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
They told me that they immediately said, you know, go to hell and you can shove this up your ass. But still, you think about all of the. All of the mongrels out there that are going to take $8,000 to repeat this. And here's the end of it. So I need you to go to nextgenamerica.org/bully to commit to voting this fall. By signing up, you'll help send a message to other young people that we have the power in numbers to put an end to this. And it's called Bully and the Beast. This is the so you want to talk about fall. You want to talk about what we're in for and how we're being set up for a bigger battle down the end run here, and how the Russia mentality has not been defeated. And the people who were behind that and have orchestrated that and have worked the entirety of the media like a ventriloquist puppet. It's unbelievable. It's still here. It's still here. The same mentality that did all of that stuff. The same kind of people who were working the Adam Waldmans, they're working with the Adam Waldmans and James Comey and Mark Warner. It's all the same. They're working. They're constantly working. You know, you think about it there too. They don't have money. Where's all their money? How do they make this? Yeah. How do they have this money to pass around?
$8,000 per influencer. And they start off the script so nonpartisan, like I'm like, oh God, you know, no matter whether or not you like Trump, listen to me trash on Republicans with complete abject lies for the next 15 minutes. Holy moly, mother.
So if you hear anybody, you're going to be hearing influencers spout that crap soon. And you'll just know.
Can't wait to see the comment sections of their videos.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've seen this script before. So it's $8,000 for your soul, huh? All right.
Wowie. 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 Well, that was a good segue. Huh. How did that happen?
That we were talking about. Oh, damn. I forget.
Okay.
I forget. But it went one thing to the other.
All right. So
that had just been sent to me right before we started.
Oh, okay.
You know, so this is fresh.
Well, that's good to know, actually. I'm glad that you shared it because this is I mean, it's just not none of it's true. That's disgusting. How do these people live with themselves?
Oh, fine. They're totally fine with it. They're totally fine with it.
It's like somebody on Twitter today. Who was it? It was somebody with a rainbow flag next to their name. I responded because it was just so horrible. Rand Paul just tried to play a doctor on TV, and Dr. Fauci is schooling him and exposing him as the fool that he is.
He is a doctor.
I know.
He is a doctor.
And she got ratioed. Well, not anymore. She was ratioed a few minutes ago. And then she says, didn't graduate college. Daddy bought his way into medical school, is not board certified, and is a quack. Any questions?
Any questions? Yeah, who are you?
This is Amy Siskind, Amy_Siskind, an activist, feminist, author.
Oh, so she's sane. Okay.
Yeah. Former Wall Street executive.
Activist, feminist, author.
She has 400.
What the hell does that even mean?
I know. 441,000 followers, and her pinned tweet from 2 days ago has 24 retweets. I just am saying.
Yeah, I pinned this. This is one of my latest literary achievements. 400,000 followers. I've earned all of it. 24 retweets. What is it?
Yeah, 24. God. Like most of her tweets that aren't inflammatory like that get like 200 retweets, 100 retweets, 60 retweets, 29 retweets. She's got no engagement whatsoever. Anyway, speaking of COVID and Dr. Fauci, let's listen to our good friend, Ned Ryan on Tucker Carlson last night.
Okay.
Model, which we now know. Ned Ryan is the founder and CEO of American Majority, and he joins us tonight. Ned, why, and I don't want to single out Fauci, who, by the way, has not been the wrongest of the many leaders we've been mismanaged by, but he has often been wrong, as people are. Why are we hearing calls to just obey him unquestioningly?
This is, to me, is just completely bizarre, Tucker. I mean, the whole record over the last few months, I'm not sure what he's been right about, and I'm not sure why we are actually listening to him based off his record over the last few months and to him saying what the future should look like. It feels like, and I have to be honest about this, that he's just making things up as he goes.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it, Tucker. He and Dr. Birx walked in the Imperial College model to Trump and said you have to shut down based off this model, which we now know is so deeply flawed and so buggy, the software, that every paper and every decision that was made off that should be retracted or rejected. Then they walked in the Murray models from the University of Washington, also deeply flawed. Now, we also know, Tucker, that anybody in any business, if they had walked this into their boss multiple times, bad intelligence, that ended up damaging, severely damaging the company, they would be fired and then they would be ostracized. And here we have Dr. Fauci in front of the Senate lecturing us on what he thinks the future should look like. I think we should question the entire premise of these experts somehow being infallible. But I have to tell you, Tucker, this devastating result is the end of progressivism, in which we had an unelected, educated elite who, empowered with this belief in scientism, was somehow going to lead us to utopia. And now we're finding this golden calf of the administrative state is ringing hollow. And Fauci, to be very blunt, is the face of this failed administrative state.
I love Ned Ryan.
Yeah. Well, I hope it's the end of progressivism, but they're very tenacious crooks. So,
Frank.
Yes.
I'm going to put the rest of my thread in the description box so we can move on to this disgusting bill with another few clips from Tucker Carlson.
Okay.
He has been on fire.
$3 trillion more. $3 trillion. As if everything that has already happened hasn't been egregious enough.
Look, forget the $3 trillion for a second. It's the other stuff in here.
The election.
Yes. And this bill is like over 1,000 pages long. Now, this is the problem. Somebody's like, oh, we'll never pass. Fine. Great. Maybe you're right. The problem is they throw in things that they know will never be accepted by anybody. And then when they pare it down, they make it like they made concessions. And the Republican, spineless Republicans on the right say, okay, well, they conceded there, so we'll concede here. Bull! None of this can stand. And, you know, the problem is they pass this crap before there's enough time for anybody to make noise about it. And then it's passed and you're sitting there like, what just happened?
Yep.
So Tucker's going to help us through some of this. Huh? I get heartburn thinking about it. Heartburn.
Here. It's bad.
Could not be. Well, we spent all day reading Pelosi's bill to find out. Too few did that. We did.
Thank you, Tucker.
And here's what we found. First and most glaringly, with more than 30 million Americans out of work, really the last thing we need is more illegal low-wage labor from abroad. Yet this bill goes out of its way to supply illegal immigrants, who, in case you needed to be reminded, have no right to be here in the first place, with billions in taxpayer dollars. According to House Democrats, illegal immigrants must have a right to have the $1,200 checks that American citizens received in the last bill. They would also receive the same direct payments as American citizens going forward. So in effect, it's a huge payoff, the Democratic Party's most cherished constituency, a group that's not even allowed to be here. And then it goes on from there. The bill contains an amnesty provision. For the duration of the coronavirus crisis, that's something I'd like to see extended a very long time, all illegal immigrants employed in so-called essential services would be shielded from deportation. And their employers would be shielded, too. People who hire illegal aliens could not be prosecuted. Now, don't be fooled. This is not about protecting physicians who are critical to providing medical care to the rest of us. Current essential workers, as they are defined in this bill, is in fact an enormous category that spans almost every part of the American economy. It includes employees in food services, laundry, waste management, childcare, agriculture, transportation, restaurants, as well as any retail worker in America who works at a location that sells food or beverages. This is a blanket amnesty for virtually every illegal alien who has already taken an American job. And once this amnesty is granted, it will never be taken away. Bet on that no matter what they tell you. Anyone who lives in Washington can confirm that. Once passed, it's not going away. And at that point, there will be no more debate about illegal immigration. The issue will be settled permanently, and Democrats will win every presidential election for the rest of your life, the rest of your children's lives, the rest of your grandchildren's lives.
That's just the beginning.
Yeah. And you know, I didn't even get around to the amnesty aspect of that last night. I concentrated on the mail at home measures, of course, and there was a few other things in there.
There's two more clips that are really worth listening to.
No, please. This is
terrifying.
It's terrifying only because you can't negotiate with this. This is something you can't negotiate with.
These people.
I mean, you take that however you want. There is no negotiating with this kind of person. And of course, they have a vanguard party leadership that at least commands the loyalty of millions of Americans. This is something you cannot negotiate with, which is this is the most scary thing. I'm not worried about this bill being rejected, or at least this version of a bill being rejected. As you said before, it's a sales tactic of everybody. You walk into a Kohl's department store and they show you 75% off of anything. It's usually because it was inflated first so that it could be brought down in price.
Yep.
So I mean, it's a common showroom thing there to inflate the price, pare it on down, make it all arbitrary, and make people believe that they're getting the deal of the century. That happens in politics as well. So whatever. That being said, it doesn't matter that this is not going to survive as is. The fact that this is the predominant stance that the other party in this false two-party paradigm is standing by. Why the hell did they reject Bernie Sanders? I keep asking.
I know.
Why did they reject Bernie Sanders? Seriously, what is it? Why did they need to legitimize Biden even for a couple of more months when this is the stuff that they're putting forward? This would probably make Bernie Sanders blush.
He should have been their nominee. I mean, he would have been in heaven. He could sell this stuff up and down the river here.
Specific person.
Hold on.
Called this bill the Heroes Act. They're telling you it will help healthcare workers. But as of tonight, thousands of American healthcare workers are being furloughed from their jobs or fired entirely. This bill, remarkably, orders DHS to expedite visa processing for foreigners who want to come to the U.S. and work in healthcare. Got that? American healthcare workers laid off, now they could be replaced by foreigners willing to work for less. We don't have to guess if that could happen. It's happened throughout American industries. Under this bill, it would help happen to our healthcare system as well. Sorry, unemployed Americans, better get used to drawing a government check. That's your future. And then there's the long section in this legislation about drugs. The bill is strongly in favor of drugs, probably because when you're high, you're less likely to think or worry about what else is in the bill. The bill mentions cannabis 68 times. It orders the federal government to produce an annual report on, quote, expanding access to financial services for minority-owned and women-owned cannabis-related legitimate businesses.
Really?
Democrats would like to see more drug sales in minority neighborhoods.
So much.
That's in this bill. Keep it.
Now, Tucker is very anti-marijuana, but that's not the point here. This is ridiculous. In this bill, this is what I
have absolutely no problem with cannabis whatsoever. But at the same time, I also know what kind of an obstacle it poses in a productive society. 100%. It is Brave New World, Soma. I mean, it's just one more. It's one more variation of Soma. And to hear it pop up. I didn't even know this. You know, to hear it pop up like this in this legislation, and as much as it is, man, oh man, are they just trying to keep people at home, completely complacent, and ordering Uber Eats. you know, off the dollar menu and just enjoying a nice hooked in life in the Matrix while they have the they have all the you saw all the people in the Rose Garden yesterday or the day before, all the members of the press. People are taking pictures of the members of the press at the Rose Garden prior to the cameras going on. Everybody has their masks around their neck. And then when the cameras go on and they're asking the question, the president questions, they all have their masks around their mouth, just trying to constantly brand people at home with a new way of life, even though they don't intend to live that way whatsoever. If you think that any of these people are getting together in their black tie events over the next couple of weeks and months, and people are going to be walking around in their tuxedos and their face masks, you've got another thing coming. It's nonsense. They want you home, they want you stoned, and they want you voting for socialists.
We're going to end there. There's a lot more to talk about in this show, but I'm going to say something. If you're a fan of the show, I would definitely, definitely tune in on Friday.
Oh, yeah, please. Please.
I would definitely tune in on Friday. I can't say why or if or when. Well, when, obviously, is when the show airs at 2:30. But I'm telling you, from me to you and Frank to you, it may be a good idea for you to very, very carefully watch the clock tick down to 2:30 on this Friday.
It's going to be good.
Yes, it is.
It is going to be good.
You have been listening to the Wednesday edition, not Friday. Wednesday. Friday is the day that you really need to tell your friends to listen to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day in the basement with a medicine ball, Val, and
Beans. Oh, we got an email yesterday. I forgot to tell you about real quick. Poor Jerry is going to be like, oh, God, I started the music. It was this. It was from someone named Joe. Joe, thank you so much for your email. I haven't gotten to write you back yet. I love Dark to Light. Yesterday, you and Frank were talking about how the left ruins words, and you mentioned the word meddling. It instantly brought to mind Scooby-Doo. At the end of each episode, it was those meddling kids that ruined it for the bad guy. I also like the way you are when talking about something that disgusts you. And why the hell can't Frank just say Frank to your beans when starting the show? Doesn't he get it?
I can just say Frank.
Would not be the same. I do not want you to change a thing. I just thought it was hysterical.
Go ahead. Hey, you know what? Here, do the intro again. Let's test it out.
You've been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frank. That's fun. That was great. Let's do that every day. Yeah, let's do that every day. Sign me up.
Joe, we love you. You rock. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time, me and Frank, on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. Do not miss the Friday show.
No, don't do it.
Say it.
But yeah, later.
This is A Place for My Head Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
This week, we're talking to singer-songwriter and founder and former frontman of the band El Nino. His name is Christian Machado.
After the Revolution album, sometime around maybe One Nation Underground is kind of where I personally went into this dark hole of, like, if I wasn't on tour, I wouldn't want to go outside. I didn't want to leave my apartment. I wasn't on hard drugs. I wasn't doing anything. I didn't even drink when I was home. This is what I thought I wanted to do, because it was my way of totally compensating what was the chaos and the insecurity, the constant feeling of especially during those years when you were TMing, it was the constant feeling of, okay, things aren't going to get better. Things are only going to get worse.
That's how I felt all the time.
I remember I would come home from tours and I would go into my apartment in Edgewater. And then I wouldn't even leave my apartment for like 3 weeks. Thank God there was a corner store that I could walk to the corner. You know, at the time I was smoking cigarettes, I would go get a pack of cigarettes and, you know, Arizona iced tea or whatever.
Good old 7-Eleven, Dunkin'.
Yeah, but that was literally my only time out of the house. Was like once every couple of days, I go get a pack of cigarettes or something to drink, and I didn't even want to be outside. I didn't even want to see people, and not because it wasn't because the shows aren't rewarding. And for that person like you or crew people, it has to be probably 100 times worse than what any musician must feel. Because at least a musician has the reward of going up on stage, connecting with the fans, and then there's this, you know, overall feeling of this is why I'm doing this, because the connection with these people, and we connect on a musical level, and the music feeds them emotionally the same way it feeds me emotionally, and things like that. After that's done, if the touring life situation is bad, the musician right back to seclusion.
A Place for My Head with Brandon Thompson and Jerry P. Tuck can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.